These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs. Crack on.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull, that's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Leia Healthcare. It's good to live. Proud sponsor of The Left Wing with Luke Fitzgerald.
They were O'Driscoll, Horgan, extra man is Fitzgerald. Oh, Fitzgerald is cutting back inside! Leinster have another! Darcy O'Driscoll through the legs. Rob Carney out to Fitzgerald again. Step and score. Number two for him.
Hello and welcome to the Left Wing Independent.ie's rugby podcast in association with Leia Healthcare. I'm Will Slattery, joined in studio. Happy Easter, Luke Fitzgerald.
Happy Easter, Will. How are things?
Yeah, not too bad. Do you have any Easter eggs?
I had a few Easter eggs.
A few?
Will. I did have a few Easter eggs. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought I was past that age, but clearly people still think I'm an immature idiot.
Well, I don't think anyway.
An immature tub and gave me a lot of chocolate for Easter. No, it was great. It was great fun, actually. Good old Easter.
What kind of Easter egg?
There was my auntie got me a very nice one, a Butler's one? It was a Butler's one, and my mum got me a little Smarties one, so solid, very solid. The Butler's one was good. The Butler's one had like honeycomb or something. It was fierce fancy.
Sounds appetizing.
What about yourself? Did you get a few?
No,
in there?
I'm not an Easter egg person. I turn.
You can see it. You need a good Easter egg or
do
two.
I'm wasting
not,
away.
Not a pick on
I'm
you,
emaciated.
Man. Gav, look at me. He hasn't got a pick on him.
Yeah, I'm wasting away in the studio. They don't feed me enough in here.
Well, get a few. I'll give you one of my Easter eggs.
No, if it comes in burrito bowl form, I won't be eating it.
Oh my God, you love your burritos, don't you?
Burrito bowl distinction.
Oh, Reese, you don't even go with the wrap.
No wrap.
What's the story? Are you a picky eater?
Yeah, well, I guess so, yeah. I guess you could say
you
that.
You look peaky, all right. I am the complete opposite.
Well,
I don't need anything.
Well, tonight you've outdone yourself. Well, I wouldn't say outdone, because Sexton is the biggest name. But short of Sexton, we've got...
Sean O'Brien on the first show was a huge
one.
That was big.
But you've gotten in the next generation of superstar tonight. We're going to be joined a little later on by Leinster and Ireland flanker Dan Levy to look back on Leinster's big win over Saracens and a host of other topics. Mm-hmm. So congratulations for getting that.
Yeah.
I'll give you credit. You've actually done very well with the guest booking.
I told you, I get on quite well with the younger lads. I always made a good effort with them. So I'm sure, hopefully the next crop coming through.
You're old enough to be his dad, realistically. But
Jesus, Will. That's you give me a lot of credit. I didn't have much game when I was, is he 25?
He's 23, I think.
Oh, he's only 23. Jesus, lucky. So such and such. It's great to have him on. You know, he's a guy who I would have seen coming up through the system. He was only just kind of starting out, but... you could kind of see he could be what he is right now, like what he's kind of capable of being, as long as he kind of had a few bad injury runs and he had a few selection things when I think Matt O'Connor was around that made it difficult for him. You know, Matt was under a lot of pressure and he kind of stuck to his big guns, your Shoneys and these guys who were, and Jamie. So it was hard for him to get a slot in there. But you could see it in him, like he's great belief in himself. I think at times he probably came across the wrong way, probably too far on the other side of belief, you know, on the cocky side. But that was never my read on him. I really liked him, got on great. I like the crew that he's in. There's a nice bunch of lads there. Luke McGrath and Marshy Boy and those lads. They're a lot of fun. Keane Kelly.
Gang of St. Michael's past pupils.
Yes. Good lads. Good lads for Michael's lads, as I always tell them. They're a good bunch and it's good to see, you know, a few of them doing great, like James Ryan as well. Rory O'Loughlin actually is doing very well. So they have a good group in there.
Yeah, so delighted to hear from Dan in just a little bit. But first I wanted to hear about your experience on a rival rugby podcast. I believe, last Friday night. Yourself and Big Jim Hamilton.
Big Jim,
on an episode of the Rugby Pod, which is, I guess, a big rugby podcast over in England.
Yes, it is.
And one of our rivals.
He's actually excellent. I was really, really impressed with him. I myself was at an engagement party the night before, Will, so I was a bit sweaty. The old dots
were sweating out the alcohol.
The dots. I can't even speak now. I'm obviously still struggling. No, the dots weren't really connecting. I was having a bit of trouble getting out some really good answers. The thoughts were there, but I just couldn't get it out. I was a bit of verbal diarrhea. But
were you allowed to drink during the?
I was, and I needed a few. And I was meeting a few pals afterwards in the lep in.
Oh, so you're just pre-drinking during the podcast, basically.
I had one quick one before I got on. I had another when I was up there, and another. Actually, did I have three? I had three nice Peronis, actually. Very nice Peronis. Big Jim handed me one when I came in the door, and I had maybe two when I was up on the up kind of speaking, which actually helped calm me down a bit. And it was actually half of it was for actually cooling me down. I was on fire up there, and unfortunately, it wasn't actually my performance. It was just I was actually sweating bullets. I was in bad shape, Will. It wasn't my best, but I really enjoyed it. It's nice to get out and talk. Like, he was really, really good in the game, actually. You know, he's playing a lot of good teams, I suppose. That Saracen team being a standout. Played in Leicester with Leo. So he was, you could tell he was a guy who'd been in some good rugby setups. He knew that he understood the game, you know.
I'm not going to lie, it was Friday night, was this on?
Friday night.
So on Friday, I was out with a few friends, and one of them mentioned, I think Luke is doing the rugby pod tonight. He's at a big
cheating
event.
On you.
Well, I was a bit put out. I was like, where's my? It should be the two of us.
We're a team.
From now on, you need to tell your agent, if there's podcast-related things, we need to be booked as a tandem.
Fine. I will tandem bike there.
Exactly.
I don't know.
I need to be cut in on this.
You need to be... when do I get cut in on your air sport, man? What's going on?
Wet.
Unbelievable.
Well, you were asked if you wanted to do it finally. You said no.
Not from you. You were the last person to ask me.
I texted you and asked you. We could have teamed up on air sport.
Well, stop. You can't prove it on... we can't prove it on air, so don't even bother. It was a bit of fun to do it. Nice to get it, to talk to people from different setups, to get a few different ideas. It was good fun. We were in the Lep Inn, which is like a staple. Like, that's actually Owen O'Malley's older brother is involved in that. So it was nice to get up there. They've done a super job on it.
Who was presenting?
It was a girl called Christina Mahan. She's in the players' union, or she's a players' rep. And she did a great job. I think she was a late stand-in. So well done to her and Big Jim. It was a great night.
I was going to say, was she better than me?
Will, she wasn't better than you. Okay, don't worry. She was good. She was
my feelings would have been doubly hurt.
Will, I would never say that to you. No, you're confident. You're a conference presenter, aren't you?
So all future bookings, Will Slattery and Luke Fitzgerald.
Go to at Slattery Will.
Exactly, at Slattery Will. My email is willslattery8.
No, but look, it's fun. And I think we'll hopefully get a bit of crossover with them at different points. Andy Goode as well, who does that with him, is very, very funny and very good on the game as well. So, yeah, it should be good. Hopefully we'll have a bit of crossover now with them.
Triple threat match podcast wars between us, Ugo Monye, Andy Goode and Jim Hamilton. That needs to happen at some stage.
It's no competition, mate. We blow them out of the water.
Okay, just before we bring in Dan Levy, I just want to get your thoughts on the Munster Toulon game as well, because it was one of the great European Cup ties decided by great European Cup tries. Just the whole occasion was phenomenal. Like, Munster under the pump for so long. Like, Toulon butchered about four or five tries, even in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, look, they rode their luck at times, but I think you need to do that in big
competitions. That was a penalty try, wasn't it, in the first minute?
Yes, I think it was a penalty try. But I think they were good for it in the end. They were battled hard. They were low on numbers in a few areas. They're missing a few big players. Your Keith Earls isn't that. Like, they're big players for Munster. They're experienced guys. They had a few key guys. I mean, Peter O'Mahony is just... I just think he's such a good player.
I was going to say, the holiday seemed to do Peter O'Mahony.
And Conor Murray was unbelievable.
I stand by that criticism.
I didn't think it was a criticism. I thought it was an observation.
It was an observation. I stand by my point, although they don't. Murray and O'Mahony both played unbelievable.
They were unbelievable.
They were phenomenal.
And actually, everyone who had a break played
Carney
really
played well.
Yeah, like everyone who went away played really, really well. So, like I said, there's two different schools of thought on that. And... I think you're wrong, Will. Sorry. Sorry, did I say that? I didn't mean to say that. It was great. It was a great day out in Thomond. I think they've missed a few of those big days in the last couple of years. And, they're so hard to beat down there. Like, it's 71 out of 76 now, Champions Cup games. So, it felt like a fortress. I mean, the try was spectacular. What a finish from Andrew Conway. A guy who, had a bit of few kind of a bit of a struggle at Leinster, probably in a similar situation to Levy, where there's a lot of senior guys ahead of him. He didn't get as much game time. He got a bit towards the end and played brilliant in the Challenge Cup. But Jesus, like he probably would have been in that Six Nations Will this year.
Well, yeah.
So it's been a tough year for him so far because he's playing brilliantly.
Just the try itself, though, it was just funny because I was watching him with a few friends from school and we would have all been in around the same year as Andrew Conway, so we would have seen him a lot then. And when we saw him play at the time, we thought those tries were going to be happening every single week. We were like, this guy is like, those are the kind of tries he used to score.
It's a bit different.
I know it doesn't translate exactly, but like, it's just funny to see him now finally kind of. Not finally, but he's probably at the peak of his career at the moment, you know.
Yeah,
and he's hitting a level that we maybe expected him to hit. Well, certainly me and a few other people expected them to hit this level, you know, throughout his career.
But he's going to fall into that category, like alongside like smaller guys have a bit more to figure out in the game.
He's very he put on a lot of bulk now, hasn't he?
He put on a lot in Leinster as well. Like he's a really strong guy. Like he's a brilliant athlete, but he's a small guy. Like and so is it's the likes of Jordan Armour. It's kind of people actually abuse me. Like both these guys are special rugby players. Don't get me wrong on that one, but it takes you longer as a small guy to figure out, you know. Figure out how to use your body weight well. Figure out how to not get exposed in games, you know, in terms of body weight against marking a bigger guy. You know, how do you take them down? What positions do you need to be in? You know, how do I survive in the contact all the time? Is my body position has to be better than everyone else's? I have to find, you know, other places in the game to get involved. I should be fitter than guys. You know, my lateral movement will be better than guys. But it takes you a long time to figure out the spaces where that stuff will really benefit the team and where you'll get the best out of yourself. And then there's a few non-negotiables where you just have to be really good, and it's harder for you than other people. Like I think defensively, you know, your body position has to always be better than everyone else's. You can't go off your feet because you don't have the body weight. And then in the air, it's going to be a struggle for you in the air, so you have to be really, really good there. I think Andrew Conway's a guy who's gotten continuously better in all of those facets. He's figured out about himself, and I think he's playing the last 2 or 3 years. You see how good he is in the air. You watch Munster play, and like Zeebo is a big guy. Like he's 6'2 or whatever. He's 6'3 maybe. He's a tall guy and he's excellent in the air. But Andrew Conway is just as good. And he's probably about 5'10. I think someone like Jordan Larmour is a guy who should really be looking at Andrew Conway and saying, "There, look what he can do that. I can definitely be great at those things." So, you know, it's great. I kind of see a lot of similarities between the two. And I'm delighted to see Andrew come through. He's a really good fella, trains very hard. Tough guy as well for a small fella. So, I mean, he was out for, was it 5-6 weeks before this game? And then to come back, was that the 78 minute he scored that in?
I think 73rd maybe.
Oh, it was 73rd, yeah. Sorry. 73rd minute to score that try after having not played in six weeks. Unbelievable.
What did you make of Conor Murray's try? So shrewd. He knows the rule book. He's a human rule book.
Apparently, yeah. Like, I think, look, what I would say is I think he's a really bright rugby player. He's a tough guy as well. He's a guy you want in your team.
Was it a try, in your opinion? Should it have been a one?
I think it probably was a try, actually. And I think by the letter of the law, it probably was a try as well. So, you know, I think the Zeebo one, I think that's obviously the French papers are going mental about the Zeebo one, and probably rightly so. But I think that one was a try. And I thought that it was a real opportunist try, real smart. You want all your nines, you know, there's a lesson in that for all the nines. Like, if you're around the ball all the time, you know, you've got to be making decisions. You've got to understand the rule book. And I think, you know, you look at that, how big it's paid off for him learning that in a big game for Munster. That was a tight game. Like, that wasn't... You could easily see that going the other way.
Toulon, like, Radawara knocked on, reaching for the line. Tuasova, like, was put through by Nanu at the very start, and Conway just got him onto the touchline. Like, they butchered some serious try-scoring chances.
Yeah, they looked a little loose, very French, you know, and I think you look at a lot of the French teams, and that looks like look at the international team as well. You know, they're just loose. They kind of... Look, they have some great finishers. They can score some fantastic tries, but then they're losing a lot of facets of the game.
But Munster scrambled well, though.
They scrambled really well, and that's what you're going to get. Like, you're going to get that with an Irish team. I think you're going to get that. The attention to detail is going to be good. They're going to know what you're going to throw at them. They're going to understand, you know, the individuals they're playing against, what their strengths are. And they're going to know all those things. They're going to do their work, and they're going to be hard to beat, because they're a real unit. There's no real individuals out there, and I think. You kind of saw a bit of that. That was what I really saw, was that I thought like you know, Toulon, even in Chris Ashton's interview afterwards, he's kind of criticising Tranduc for not finding touch. But like, Tuisova just completely has an absolute brain fart. Like, he just runs by Conway. Like you should have three guys. If Tuisova doesn't do that,
it looked like he was being controlled, like in rugby, like 18 or something, and someone was just making him sprint off.
Like a glitch in the game, he just kept running.
Like, he just kept running past Conway.
It was one of the biggest brain farts of all time. Like, in those situations, they always try and tell you, listen, you defend the touchline first. So that's fine. Chris Ashton does that. But you want to have three guys in the 15. You want to have, you know, the first two guys close. You know, if he shoots ahead, he should stay in the touchline, and Chris Ashton should be on his inside, and Tranduke should be on the 15. That's a way easier tackling. It's way easier for the guys to connect on the inside of Tranduke. So if Andrew Conway does run across him there, he gets tackled by the guy on the inside. Like, there's no one on his inside either. So, like, you know, there's a couple of errors. There was a lot of team errors in that try. So obviously, you know, yes, he should have made touch, but it was fairly touch and go. Like, I mean, Andrew could easily fall into touch on that one. It was a brilliant take as well. Probably didn't get the mention after the incredible run to finish the try. But
after slating Tranduke, I was glad that he was playing so well up to then. I was glad that he actually made a bit of a mistake.
I told you he's a good player. He's a really good player. Like, he is having a tough season. I think he's been in and out of the team, and your man is actually a good fella. Your man's Bellew.
Yeah, he played well in the day.
Yeah, he's a nice player as well. So, you know, there is a bit of that there, but what I would say is that, you know, I was really surprised. A guy criticising his own teammate.
It's Chris Ashton. Are you that surprised?
Yeah, like? I know. But I think, you know, there was more to it. That was a team try. Like, where's the inside support? Like, they're just miles off the pace. Like, you can't do that. You can't just leave. I think you see it, and it kind of ties into the looseness point. You look at French players away from the ball and what they do away from the ball. So, like, that's their opportunity to take a break. And they look like they take a break. You know, Irish guys, I think all the coaches, Stuart Lancaster, your Frank Grann, you know, your Leo Cullens, your Joe Schmidt, your Andy Farrells, your Simon Eastwees, they're all having a look at who's doing what off the ball. As Joe Schmidt would always say, are you making your teammates' job easier? You know, and that's what you're supposed to be doing when you're off the ball. You get in good positions, drag, because that drags opponents who are looking at you, oh, geez, he's in a good position now, I have to defend him as well. Creates indecision, creates more opportunity for Johnny Sexton and Conor Murray on the ball. That's what that does. If you don't do it, it's a nightmare. It means that guys are playing one-out rugby all the time, and it's way easier to defend you. And the converse, defensively, if you're not working hard off the ball to connect with people, connect with Tranduke there, there's a massive hole for Andrew Conway, who's an absolute speedster, to run through. And you saw the damage he did when he went through. I mean, the step was outstanding once he made through. Like, your man, they were never going to stop him. So there's more than that, and I just think it's a team game. Like, rugby's a team game. Yeah, a guy makes a mistake, but you don't back up mistake with more mistakes. And there was three other ones from what I could see there. So, you know, such a bad trait in a guy. I hate a guy criticising a teammate publicly. You just shouldn't do it. You should never, ever do it. Whatever about the change.
You never criticise a teammate in public?
Never. No, you never do. It's like an unwritten rule. You just don't do it. You know, it's not a value add. You should never do that. And I think...
I won't criticise you publicly if I ever do an interview. You know,
it's
about
fine.
Podcasts.
We're in a different game here. I think it's everyone for themselves, Will, to be honest. No, but look, I think it is. It was disappointing to see that for a guy who had played well for them when he was on the pitch. And you could see he was expecting someone to be on his inside there. And that'd be kind of normal because there was only two of them defending, you know, two back three guys in a 15-metre space. It's not normal to do that.
We're going to bring Dan Levy in just a moment. But first, the draw kind of opened up a bit for Munster. Now, Claremont were knocked out by Racing 92. So, while Racing are still a very good side, Munster have beaten them this season. So, they obviously know that they can beat them again. So, All-Ireland final, I'm crossing my fingers.
Oh, look, it'd be unbelievable. It would really top off a super year. But there's a lot of rugby to be played. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk to Dan about it, but, you know, Scarlets beat them with 14 men last year. Pretty easy in the RDS in that semi-final. So Leinster will be wary. They had two battles with them during the Six Nations. But I don't know how those bloody games were played during Six Nations. Whoever did that isn't... Anyway, I'm not going to say, but... Yeah, not a smart decision, I don't think, because those are two really, really cool games, and those two teams are humming at the moment.
Yeah,
and they've got a lot of guys. They've got big enough squads. Like, Scarlets don't have as much depth, I think, as Leinster.
No,
but they still have 25 guys who are really, really top quality. Like, easy, I think, you know, if not more. And I think, they were two humdingers. They should have had them. That would have been an unbelievable back to back if they had all their internationals around. So that was disappointing. But look, on that side of things, really difficult. And Munster did lose the Racing, so...
Narrowly,
but I still think that they're a bloody difficult team to beat. They've got, like, and it'll be, like, a two...
Dan Carter coming off the bench.
Well, did you see the bit of magic? No, I think it was a forward pass.
It was definitely a forward pass. I would have won so much money if Claremont had won that game, and it was a blatant forward pass.
The amount of crap about this ball, you know, hands going
forward, hands going backwards.
Hands going backwards is absolute... it's absolute garbage. That was 100% a four pass because he wasn't even running. He threw it flat footed. Do you know what I mean? He threw it off his so he didn't lean. He didn't lean on his inside foot and keep going. He leant on his outside foot, like literally like a scrum half pass. Like it was absolutely a four pass. So look, I don't know if they need to look at that rule again. I thought that was silly. It looked silly on TV. Like he saw where, did you see where he collected? He threw before, did he throw it before the 22 and he completely caught it after the 22. Mm. But it wasn't like he had continued running into the guy.
It was a strange call.
I thought it was terrible. I thought it was a poor call. But I think it's a poor ruling at times, you know?
Mm.
Anyway.
On that note.
On that song.
We are joined.
It will be unbelievable, Will, to get the two provinces in the final. Wouldn't it? It'd be Bilbao, like a load of Irish paddies over.
Well, I'll be over
crack.
There anyway, so I'm looking
happy
forward to
days.
It.
Look at you.
Yeah, so we're joined on the line now by Leinster and Ireland flanker, the man of the moment, Dan Levy. Dan, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on, lads.
Yeah, no problem. We're just talking a bit off air. We're actually a bit worried for your physical well-being, Dan. You're putting in these great performances, but you're coming out with these outrageous black eyes each one. I think soon enough you might need to wear an eye patch or something like that to mitigate against it.
But eye patch isn't going to help me. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just when you play seven and you're playing 80 minutes week in, week out, you just get these little knocks. But yeah, my body's actually good. My right eye is just taking a pounding these days.
Did you always bruise like a peach, or how does that work?
I don't know. Like, it's just kind of in the last few months, I've got a few bad ones. I had one or two last year as well, but I don't know. Yeah, hopefully this is going to be the last one for a while, but I don't really see that happening.
And here, talk to me. How did you find the game on the weekend? I had so many people asking me about kind of what the pace would be like. And I said, I think this would be one of the most, when you get to quarterfinal stage, they start becoming more and more like an international. Is that how it felt out there?
Yeah, it definitely felt up to the kind of international test match standard. You know, it's pretty much test match standard, everything bar its name. You know, if you look at the Sarri's team and even our team, you know, pretty much littered with internationals the whole way throughout. So the intensity, and especially the fact that they're, you know, the reigning champs and stuff, and We're trying to be contenders now this year. The level, everything was always going to be very high. But, yeah.
And here, obviously, you would have been kind of just coming into things when I was there a couple of years ago, Dan. You'd had a couple of injuries and, you know, a few unfortunate ones in a row, but you really looked to have gotten up. You know, I mean, you're going through a great run of form. Obviously, that's fairly obvious to say, but I mean, the body seems to be, you know, behaving, I suppose, if that's the best way. And obviously, you need a bit of luck in terms of knocks, but how have you found the transition? Is it just a bit of luck, or have you changed anything?
You kind of learn to control your body as much as you can. You know, things are always going to happen. There's some injuries you can't prevent, kind of freak accidents, and where I play, it's really part and parcel, going for poaches and stuff. You leave yourself in quite a vulnerable position. And especially now, he's starting to get targeted a bit and stuff, going for the ball. So it is pretty dangerous. But I think it's a combination of making sure you get your recovery right and your strategies and everything. But also you need a little bit of luck mixed up in there as well.
Yeah, Dan, as you mentioned, you know, it's about you're trying to getting your body right at the moment. This would be probably the biggest run of games you've had kind of in the first team exposed to the top quality opposition. Like, how have you felt you've done from a physical standpoint? Because obviously you might have been into the team and then out of the team for a while. You've kind of played 8 to 12 weeks now, top quality opposition. And you say you still feel pretty good?
Yeah, I think I had a pretty good spell last year as well. Where I played a good few games in a row. But I just think, yeah, this year, you know, maybe with a little bit more added experience and stuff, and getting, as you said, a bit of luck and a good run. I'm feeling good. The body's still feeling good. And I think I'm performing better and better each week, which is good. Getting closer to the full performance.
And I guess, you know, you've been going really well at the moment. James Ryan's been going really well at the moment. I know you're good friends. You're both from St. Michael's. Are you kind of competing with him to see who can get the most kind of man of the match awards, the most column inches?
I don't think he's got one man of the match award. I think I'm winning on that front. But it's great because we're I think we're two pretty similar characters. I didn't really know him even though we were in the same school and stuff. I was 3 years ahead of him, so I never actually played rugby with him. And then he kind of burst onto the scene. He was injured all, I think it was last year, he was injured for a lot of the year, but he came onto the tour to Japan and USA, and we roomed together in New York, and he was just coming out with, like, I didn't really know what to think of him. And we'd always been nice to each other and stuff, and obviously look after the young lads and stuff like that, but over in New York, he was just coming out with these wild statements that, like, I could relate to, but other people were like, that was it.
What sort of statements are these?
It's hard for my finger on it. Like, a lot of the lads in Leinster would know that he's just kind of like, yeah, he's an interesting character. But, we really hit it off, and he's got the similar kind of mindset as me on how we play and how we try physically dominate and exert ourselves in opposition, and it does. It's kind of funny, like, when we come in and look at the stats and stuff the next day, and, like, I can give him shit about, like, I won the collision loads this week. He was pretty close second, but, like, first thing, like, we did when I went over to him, and I was saying, like, that was actually pretty good for you and whatnot. It's so funny, like, so it's great to have him there, and great to have someone who's so ambitious and wants to drive the team on at such a young age. It's good to see.
It's funny that, you know, kind of people talk about you a lot in the same sentence, because I was doing a bit of research for this earlier and I came across a quote from St. Michael's director of rugby, Andy Skeehan, when he was kind of talking about your rise and James Ryan. He said that you wouldn't have had the same drive or the same dedication as James Ryan did when he was in school.
So I think when I was a bit younger, I didn't really see a future for me in the game. I was a bit of a messer back in school, so I was just kind of like playing ball and kind of messing around. And when I was in fourth year, I played on the junior cup team. Skeehan actually used to hate me. He was talking about dropping me a few times, and a few of the lads on the team were like, no, he's actually really good when he's not messing. That was in third year. And then in fourth year, I never really kind of thought I was going to be on the team or anything, so I didn't really like focus too much at the start, and I didn't really want to play rugby. And then I started playing a few games for the thirds and stuff, and the senior coach Greg McGrims at the time asked me would I play one game with the seconds. I played one game with seconds, and then he asked me to play one game with the first. I kind of just got roped into it, and then towards the end of the year I started to absolutely love it. I was playing with Kyle Marsh and Emma McMahon and a few other like serious players, Alex Kelly and stuff. And then from then on I kind of realized there's talent there, and I could probably go and try push on to a higher level. So from then on, it was kind of halfway through fourth year I started to realize that I could pursue this as a kind of future, and then I started taking this.
And so you were you same year as McJizzle and Marshawn, were you?
No, I was two years below Marshy, 1 year below Luke.
Some set of nicknames. I have no clue what you're talking about.
Like, my nicknames for them just keep changing. In fairness, that was a serious little vintage you were playing with. I mean, it must have been so much fun playing with those guys week in, week out. They're just like, I mean, I'd say in school, I mean, Lukey obviously has gone on, and Marshy's probably hit a bit of a stumbling block at the moment. Hopefully he'll get out of that. But I mean, in school, those guys were so, so talented. It must have been great playing around so many good players. I mean, do you think that helped kind of spur you on?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, when I was in fourth year, you know, I was playing with these guys, and I like really looked up to them. I thought they were like class. And then the next year, I kind of decided to like take a little bit more leadership in it. And then the year after was when I was in sixth year. You know, if you look at the team, Leinster team now, there's a lot of players that are in week in, week out in Leinster team that were on my year of Senior Cup Rugby 2012. Myself, Roy O'Loughlin, Ross Byrne, Nick McCarthy, Ross Maloney, Josh Murphy, Dennis Kilson, Kian Kelleher. So yeah, there's a lot of really, really good players coming through at the stage.
Sorry, I was just saying, does it feel a bit almost easy sometimes when you're out there playing in a big game for Leinster with all the people you went to school with? Does it feel like a kind of that, I don't know, this is your guys' time when you're all out there at the same time?
Yeah, it's kind of something that the younger players is kind of, if you chat to the younger players, you kind of, they all kind of feel it as well. I think when I was playing and with Lukey and stuff, I felt like it wasn't really my team, and I was just in, like, filling in, and obviously it was great and stuff, but I was playing with lads who were like 10 or 12 years older than me that I didn't really have much in common with, and it was obviously great.
Like, what are you, man? Are you saying I was like an old timer?
The old fogies like Luke.
I'm calling you old here, Luke.
Mate, I thought I was one of the young lads. I used to try and mix in with the young lads. I used to think I was cool.
but yeah, just like I kind of felt in my first like season that I was kind of just like filling in the jersey, and I didn't think that it was like too realistic for me to really be able to hammer it home. I don't know. Maybe I just thought the coaches didn't really see me as someone that could really step in and like kick on. But I think last year was a huge year. So many young players getting an opportunity and like breaking through. So I think like the ownership from the younger players, really got ramped up a lot last year, and it felt more like now, even more so than ever, it feels like our team, the dynamic kind of changed. Like all the young lads are, speaking up in meetings and, trying to push on all the players in the squad. So we're sitting in a really good place at the moment, and the squad morale and everything is really high.
And have you found, like, I mean, I think, like, in fairness now, like, I was really lucky when I first came in, I was really exposed to some really, really top quality coaches. Your Eddie O'Sullivan was the international coach at the time, Michael Cheka, these guys. At the moment now, I think you're with two really experienced guys who are, like, at the top of their game. Like, you got Leo and Stuart Lancaster. And then, obviously, in Ireland camp, you got Joe Schmidt and Andy Farrell. Have these guys had a massive impact on you? Do you feel like you're, like, when I look in the setup now, I just think there's loads of guys who seem to have made a massive jump in the last year, kind of year and a half. And I would say I would count you in there as well. Obviously, the game time has helped as well. But do you feel like the coaches have had a massive impact on you?
Yeah, I definitely would. We're blessed in Leinster to have Leo and Stuart because, I felt that, years ago in Matt's era, I just thought that, like, young players didn't really get as much of a run as they do now. And it's great to see players, young lads getting shots and taking them, like Kieran Foley hopping in and getting man of the match is brilliant, seeing the RDS and stuff like that. But I just think there wasn't as much trust put in the younger players in the Matt O'Connor era. But, you look at, like, Stuart and Leo now and what they're doing for... It's not even just the starting 15, the whole squad and the academy, and it filters down the whole way through. But I think the way we train and, the philosophy of the game and everything's evolving, even week on week, we're picking up little things and learning from our mistakes and stuff. So it's... Yeah, it's brilliant to see. And then again in the Irish setup, Joe and Faz are world class coaches as well. And I feel and Simon, everyone in there, in fairness, is really, really top end. I just felt I learned so much during the Six Nations period. I felt I was kind of building week on week and kind of being able to consistently deliver that kind of standard of performance towards the end of the competition.
And yeah, just a quick one as well on that. Like, when I look at it, I think when I look at Joe Schmidt had a period where, like, there was loads of young guys kind of came through and the team managed to kind of stay at the top of its game. When I look at it and I look at the Leinster team at the moment, like, Leo doesn't make like 10 changes or 15 changes for a lot of games unless he's really forced to do that, right? But I feel like guys like yourself, you know, your Jack Conans, your Josh van der Flyers, your Luke McGraths, whoever, like the whole Rory O'Loughlin's, all these guys, they've had like big game exposure, but they've played in teams where like there hasn't been 10 changes. Like the lads, there might be three or four changes in a week. And I feel like all the guys have got a chance to play with guys who'd be kind of like, you know, who would have, before you guys are all settled in now, would have been the first team players. You know what I mean? Like your Johnny Sexton's, your Seanie O'Brien's, your Sean Cronin's, these guys. Like when I look at it, I think that's had a, I think that makes a big difference to the young players, you know, with their opportunities. Like when I look at it, I see, like if you're in a team that there's 15 changes, it's really hard to get any rhythm. Like when I look at, do you agree with any of that? I just an observation. I've just kind of, I thought about it the last while. I was seeing, why is there so many guys coming through? And I feel like that's a big reason, is that there's change over in the squad every week, but there's not, they don't change everyone in a game unless they're like really forced, unless it's like an international break. Does any of that make sense? Do you agree with any of that?
Yeah. I can kind of see what you're saying there. I think more so last year than this year, there was kind of like a cohort of young lads that, you know, myself included, that I wasn't playing in the Six Nations. So there was a lot of lads gone. And during that kind of block where you're missing about 15 internationals on Irish duty, I think there was kind of a group of us then that played in, week out. I think we had four or five games and we came away with four or five bonus point wins. We won all the games. And that definitely gives you an opportunity to play. I know young players always used to, myself included, just target it because it is a shop window for you. When there's people gone, you get a good opportunity to get a start and show what you can really do. I think in terms of consistency, that's pretty good opportunity for people. But even over the Christmas period, we played a few games, Munster, Ulster, Connacht, and you know the team. That's after the back to back with Exeter as well. The team, you know, changed hugely. I think there was 13 changes 2 weeks in a row. Pretty much full rotation of the starting 15, and you know we got two huge wins in those games as well. So I think that ability to kind of just slot in pretty seamlessly is paramount in the league, but also in Champions Cup for teams to be able to, you know, swap around, rest players, and make sure that we're firing all cylinders when we do get tugged out is pretty important.
Yeah, Don, just to go back to the Saracens game for a moment, you know, myself and Luke were talking about your try off air and the kind of the link play between you and James Ryan. Was that something you kind of planned in advance or did it just happen off the cuff?
It's just a little play we have. You know, it's just a little thing. It actually was done to us by Exeter in the Champions Cup in the Aviva over Christmas. A tiny little 1-2 on the inside of a mall, and it kind of stretched us. And we just, you know, it's simple, but it's pretty effective, especially if you can take the ball forward like James did and commit that defender from the ruck. And it's something that we saw and, you know, heard us, so we tried to learn it. And you know, we've used it a few times. Ferg actually did one over in France in the first game of the Six Nations as well. That worked really well. So it's just a little thing we try to incorporate into the game. And you know, usually you're not expecting a line break off, you're expecting like 1 or 2 meters, but we take what you can get, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned kind of the phrase simple and effective there. Like one thing I've noticed that you've been very effective at over the last while is just kind of picking your moments to do a pick and drive like through the middle of the ruck, and you've made a few like line breaks off the back of it where you don't really see people doing that often. Is that something that you've worked on or you know, you look to identify in opposition defences when it is on?
It's just something I've always kind of been doing this. For years, like even when I shouldn't have been doing it, I was doing it. And I used to get a bit of a bollocking from the coaches for doing it. But if you look at teams now and the way the game's going, a lot of people just like to play 13 in the front line and 2 in the backfield, keep the numbers on their feet and try to get up and smash it. So if no one's committing to the ruck, there's a bit of space there a lot of the time. So, you know, it all depends on your opposition and stuff. But the Sarri's D is kind of that's kind of the model they'd go off. So yeah, just once or twice, especially if you get a good carry, teams are kind of working back to get to their points to come forward again, and they're kind of looking up to try to see the picture in front of them. So sometimes there's a little bit of space just to go straight through the middle and kind of catch them in the half.
Yeah, Luke, you would have obviously played with Dan for a couple of years. He's a confident young fella. What do you remember about you know, working with him?
I'm surprised. Like, it's really interesting. It's, you know, when you're on the show, you get to hear lots of different people's opinions about, you know, themselves sometimes, where they felt they were at. I'm really surprised to hear that you didn't always think you were going to be, you know, in the reckoning. I suppose you look at the Leinster back row with Seanie O'Brien, you know, Reese and Jamie Heese are probably ahead. I can kind of understand it, but I mean, geez, just from training, which I always felt like you were kind of a guy who got a little bit unlucky, but you could see the quality, you know. I mean, I just remember seeing, yeah, like, you know, you can see, you know, with all the turnovers, you just hang in an extra half a second or a second longer than I think is safe. And that's coming from a winger. But I was just always
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm obviously never involved in that crap, Dad. I stay as far away as I can from that when I was playing. But look, what I was just saying is, like, I was always unbelievably impressed that there's a few people you see who are, you know, it's hard to, because, well, you're a bit younger as well. It's hard to know how big a physical impact you can have at international level. And that's a big step up for people to make. There's a step up not only in physicality, but in belief and technique as well. And I've been unbelievably impressed with the step up we've had. But I am surprised. I always thought you were a real confident guy, to hear that you didn't always think you were going to be playing rugby, first of all. And that, you know, you had your doubts about, you know, when you first came in, whether you were fitting the coach's eye, et cetera, et cetera. But probably makes sense off the back of what you were saying about Matt O'Connor, when, you know, he was the coach in a very difficult, you know, era. It was kind of a transitional period for Leinster, and he was under pressure himself. So he ended up picking the guys, the experienced guys, as often as he could to try and, you know, get a few wins on the board to save the job, I suppose, at the end of the day. But I'm not surprised that you've made the transition. I'm surprised to hear that you weren't as confident that you were going to make it. Because I always felt that. I always felt, like, just from talking to you, just from watching you, that you look like a really confident guy, and a fella who, if you got a run, that, you know, I didn't really feel like there was much that could stop you. To be honest, that's an honest read. I'd tell you if I didn't think that, I really would, or I just wouldn't say it. But that was my genuine read on you. I just felt like you looked like a real quality operator, and you really polished up your game. I think it sounds to me, just when I hear you talking about certain things there, that you put a lot of thought into it as well. You know, and I think all the top players do, they think about their game. It looks like I mean, I don't know whether it's a group mentality or it's coming down from the coaches, but the stuff about picking and going through to prevent, because no one is, especially in the Premiership, none of them are defending the ruck. So that seems like the obvious ploy for me, is to try and go up through the middle, try and get them on the back foot, give your playmakers time and work from there. But it seems like you've thought that through. And a lot of the stuff, it's like you seem very calm out there. The transition for you hasn't been that big. And I always think that's a sign of a really top quality player. So I'm really excited to see, you know, how your career progresses. And that'll be my take on him, Will, so far. It's only the start of his career, but I just hope, you know, you get a bit of luck and you manage yourself really well and have a really long career.
Yeah, Dan, you were going to come in there?
Yeah, I was just on that, you said about the confidence and the self-belief. That's never been a problem for me.
I didn't think so.
A lot of times by a lot of people. You know, I think almost too much so when I came into the squad, I just had people, you know, I always kind of back myself, and I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, there is a line there, but, you know, backing yourself.
Let me tell you one thing, man.
If you
don't back yourself, and I always say this about people, if you don't, because there's enough people that are going to be doubting you throughout your career. There's the best piece of advice I ever got from my old man, who used to play at a good level as well. He said, like, there's enough people that'll doubt you. Don't talk yourself down. You don't need to be cocky or arrogant, but definitely the belief is the most important thing to have in yourself. That's what all the best sports people have. And in my experience playing with guys like Dricko, Paul O'Connell, you know, Ron O'Gara, these guys, Johnny Sexton, I think they all have huge belief in themselves and massive confidence in yourself. So,
and you have it as well, Dan.
You have it as well, mate. Don't change that. Don't change that.
Yeah, that was kind of one thing I always kind of thought. If I did get an opportunity to play and got a bit of a run, that to be not stopping me, and I'd be able to, you know, get in and, you know, make the jersey my own. And obviously, it is a lot trickier with the quality and depth of background answer. It took a lot longer than I'd want to. It was tough to break through, obviously, with so many quality players there ahead of you, waiting for opportunities as well. So it did take a few more, like a year or two more than I'd wanted. But I always kind of had that belief. What I was saying more earlier on with Matt O'Connor was that I felt, as you said, he was always going to play the more experienced player. I think a few times I did hop in and I did a good job. And as soon as the lads came back or whoever was there, there wasn't even a debate over whether I'd be playing. And it'd always be the bigger, kind of more experienced player. So I just thought that, like, it was quite tough. I found to kind of really, really, like, make it your own. But I do have a lot of self belief. It's funny talking to other people about it, like, trying to, like, pick their brains a little bit, and some people have, like, dates and stuff before games, but I kind of just the process and, you know, back your ability and go out and just give it 100% and then have none of that. So it's, you know, it should go well for you.
And this question might sound like a bit of a piss take, but I actually mean it in all seriousness. Like, obviously, you've been playing for Leinster for a couple of years, but the last 3-4 months has seen you kind of really explode onto maybe the national scene, you know, getting into the Ireland team, winning the Grand Slam, you know, picking up man of the match in a huge game against Saracens. I've seen kind of like the publications over in England as well taking notice. Like, has your life changed at all in the last couple of weeks now that you have become, I guess, more prominent or certainly more well-known outside just the rugby circles?
Surely that's a piss take question.
Are you still going to say hi to me when you see you out, man?
Of course. No, it hasn't changed. It's the same old. Like, I wouldn't be... I try to keep as leveled as possible with those kind of things. Like, I wouldn't be looking at the media. I wouldn't be reading these things. I won't listen to this back. I'm sure my mates who listen to it will slag me about saying stuff, because that always happens. But I do try to keep as leveled as possible. Like we won a quarterfinal there. We haven't got any. Like, we won a quarterfinal last year and we got spanked in the semi. You know, so. We haven't done anything, too special yet. There's a lot more work ahead of us. So it's important just to keep humble and keep grinding and make sure that we right the wrongs from last year.
So you haven't gotten mobbed in the supermarket just yet?
No, not at all. I have a few people say hello to me in Riverview, which is good.
that's just me, man. It's no one else. And here, I was interested here at Johnny Sexton saying that, you know, he was real impressed with yourself and James Ryan were up after, was a Grand Slam, getting yourselves ready, up in the gym, actually. Probably was Riverview, actually. I mean, is that something, I mean, when I listen to you talk, you've kind of used the word kind of grinding through, keep grinding, I suppose. I mean, that sounds to me like you're a guy who's, like you said, you've probably had a few painful things. Last year would have been painful. I mean, that semi-final against Scarlets and the semi-final against Claremont, they would have been painful ones for you, I assume. And it sounds to me like there's a hunger in there. And, like, you're not just satisfied with the Grand Slam. And I found that ourselves in that group we had in Leinster that was a part of the Grand Slam win in 2009 and went on to win the Heineken Cup. We had that kind of grind in us as well. Like, there was guys who were working really hard straight after that. We wanted to be successful. Do you think that's all? I mean, obviously yourself and James Ryan are doing that, but do you think that's across the group and the younger guys in general? Do you feel that hunger is in there?
Yeah, definitely. Even today, like, a few lads were off their feet today after the game and stuff. And we all doing, like, walk bikes and stuff, which maybe wouldn't have been there a few years ago. It's small things, you know, it's like not going out on the piss after a win. It's like making sure you don't pig out on the weekend, and like small little things like that, getting in an extra session if you're not playing in the weekend, or maybe a Saturday morning, or just getting to the pool and doing a bit of a stretch and just making sure you're right and you're going to be fit and you're in the right frame of mind when it does come to play a game that you're going to be ready to go. I think the squad's, you know, mentality and the trust in everyone is, you know, like at a seriously high level at the moment. So, yeah, there is definitely a drive. I try to learn from my mistakes from last year and kind of, you know, kick off.
I suppose, Dan, a lot of people are kind of hoping and wishing for a Leinster winning the semi-final and a Munster winning the semi-final, and we might get an All-Ireland final. Is that something that would really excite the players, you know, going up against your biggest rivals and as well as your international teammates in a final in Bilbao?
I haven't really thought about it. We've got a few games between now and then. There's a lot of rugby still, before that potential matchup. But that would be great. There'd be people talking about that for decades. So it would be a great one to be involved in, and it would be super to see. Yeah.
And just from last year, when you guys were beaten in the two semi-finals, like, what lessons have you learned now going into kind of a similar time of the season?
We went up to Claremont and we were ill disciplined. We were frantic. We started quite poorly and put ourselves under a lot of pressure. But then, you know, after the first kind of half an hour, we settled and I think we dominated the rest of the game, which is just a shame. Because, you know, if we maybe had been a little bit more measured at the start of the game, we could have, you know, done a bit better. That was a Claremont game, but, you know, we looked at a few things, like even the Sarries team that went on to have such a bust, you know, the last couple of years, they lost the game similar enough over in Claremont as well, over there. And, you know, they definitely learned their lessons, and, you know, that's why they've been at the top. But they're still there the last couple of years. So, I've kind of lost my trail of thought.
we'll save you here. Just on the that semi final, and I know there's a bit of rugby to be played between then and now. But like the Scarlets, I mean, there must be a serious respect in the squad. I listened to Leo Cullen talking about them after the match, Easton Asiu as well. I mean, they did, like, I was at the game in the RDS last year in the semi-final. I mean, they beat us with 14 men. Like, it was, for any Leinster man, that was a tough day, a very tough day out at the office, you know. I mean, what's the feeling like in the camp? Is there huge respect for what they're doing there? I mean, obviously one of our own is over there making a huge impact, Tighe Byrne. But they seem like they're just looking like a really good team. They look like they're almost in a similar place to Leinster, probably not with the same depth, but definitely the same quality with the top, if they have their top 23 guys out. They look like they're going to be a serious, serious challenge. I mean, what's the feeling like in the camp? I mean, you probably haven't started talking about them too much yet, but what's the feeling like in there about them?
As you said, we actually haven't really been looking at them yet because we have two big games in the league coming up first. But I do actually have a lot of respect for them as a team. Their work at the breakdown on a kind of personal level is really, really tough to play against. You know, Tighe and Cubby Boy and John Barclay are, you know, all serious threats, even Shingler. And then they play such a you know, tough attacking shape to defend against as well. They're so wide and offload, and the tempo is really high, so they are going to be a huge challenge. And we're hoping that we can learn from the semi-final last year and how to kind of combat that and neutralise their threats. But it's another game I'm looking forward to. At the moment, focus is this weekend in February at home.
And, well, one last thing on the Scarlets, like, Tighe Byrne has set the record for most turnovers in a Pro 14 season, so you'll probably be the man tasked with kind of getting the grips with him.
Yeah. It's weird when you have a second relative than that. He's phenomenal. I've approached. He's out of the ball. He's very strong. So it's just about, you know, trying to deal with it early, making sure he doesn't get a good base and get in there and muddy up the ball as much as possible. But it's not a one man job. It's a collective. So I'm just going to take all that focus off me, and that is on the deal.
Well, Dan, I really appreciate you joining us. And if your life hadn't changed already, I'm sure it will after this podcast. I'm sure you'll be getting mobbed everywhere.
Yeah. Then I'll get married to some different market after that.
Your life is about to change. Hey, listen, man. Look, thanks a million for coming on the show. Great chatting to you, and congrats on a great year so far. Hopefully now, we're hoping for you to stay injury free and have a big finish. A Grand Slam finish would be super. So thanks for coming on again, man.
Perfect. Thanks very much for having me, lad.
Cheers, Dan.
Cheers,
thanks very much.
Good luck.
That's all we have time for in the Left Wing this week. Thank you for listening, and we will be back next week with another podcast. In the meantime, you could subscribe to the Left Wing on iTunes, SoundCloud, or listen on independent.ie. So until next week, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Leia Healthcare. It's good to live. Proud sponsor of the Left Wing with Luke Fitzgerald.